Welcome to Kingdom Kids Part 3. If you've been following our Worldview Sermon Series, perhaps that makes you just a little bit confused. Well, here's the explanation. This is Fifth Sunday, and on the fifth Sunday of the month, we label that Kids Sunday here, and it's where the kids stay up with us for the entire service. And so this year, we're doing something just a little bit different, as I've been preaching a four-part sermon series on kids that made a difference for God's kingdom. The twist is that we've only been preaching them on the fifth Sundays. So whenever we reach a fifth Sunday, there'll be a break, but we will finish the Worldview sermon series next week. So since it's been a couple of months since we talked about this, let's see how much our kids learned. Yeah, I brought Bible school leftovers with me also. So, let me remind you how this game works. I'm going to ask a question. Kids, which I am defining as below the age of 18, you get the first shot at answering the question. If there's not a kid that can answer the question, then the adults will get a chance to steal, and they get the kids' treats. That's the way this works, okay? So, question number one. What was the name of the first kid that we talked about? Raise your hand, don't blurt it out. First kid that we talked about. Anybody under the age of 18? Going once? Going twice? All right. Anybody over the age of 18 that can tell me the first kid's name? Okay. You're over the age of 18.
I'm guessing.
No. Sherry? Huh? Josiah. Sherry, would you like cupcakes or honey buns? Cupcakes or honey buns? Hang on just a second. This is an interactive. Cupcakes or honey buns? All right. All right. Question number two. So we know the guy's name. His name is Josiah. Question, what did Josiah do for a living? Anybody know, under the age of 18, what did Josiah do for a living? I gave you a hint, Ava. He was a king. I ain't even got to ask here. You're Brandon's kid. I know you're a honey bun kid. All right. So, what was the second kid's name that we talked about? Under the age of 18 first? Benji? Honey, I don't even have to ask the question for you either. He's my, huh? You want the cupcake? Wow, whose kid are you? All right. All right. So his name was Samuel. Next question. Last question. Box of honey buns on the. What did Samuel do for a living? Under the age of 18? Going once? Whole box of honey buns, if you can remember. Come on, Sophia, I know these are your treat. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Under the age of 18, please raise your hand. What did Samuel do for a living? Oh, wait a minute. He was a prophet. She's under 18, and she's going to get the whole box of honey buns. All right, so that's our first two kids. Yes, and now we're going to add a third kid to it, but today we're going to start off talking about butterflies. Does the flap of a butterfly's wing in Brazil set off a tornado in Texas? The answer to the question probably differs from what you heard, but it's an honestly crazy question. However, believe it or not, it was actually posed by a scientist named Edward Lorenz in 1961. The idea was not to 100% connect how the motion of a butterfly could cause a natural disaster. What he did want to do is emphasize how in our world, small things can have a very big impact. And that is the instrument of our sermon today. Because oftentimes, we feel like we don't make a difference. I get that feeling every now and then. You work and you go back out there and look, and it just seems like nothing ever changes. Sometimes we feel very insignificant. We're a small church. On a very good Sunday, we're somewhere in the 40s right now. There are millions of people in the world. How can such a little thing make a very big difference? It's probably even more so for children. After all, we have, at least when I was growing up, the saying that children should be heard, should be seen and not heard. They just never met me. Yeah, you could hear me anywhere. They have very little power socially and economically, and in churches, they are often dismissed as they're too young to do things. And well, today, we're going to put all of those things to rest. Because guess what? Little things matter. And kids matter for God's kingdom. So this morning's lesson is all about finding a butterfly. Not an actual butterfly. If you're actually looking, look at, well, actually there's an actual butterfly. It's there on the screen there. It's not about finding that butterfly. It's about finding the little thing that made a big difference. And we're going to be in 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 through 15. If you'd like to grab a copy of the Bible there in front of you, you can follow along. But we're going to have the scriptures on the screen. And well, we're going to start off, very good place to start, verse 1. This is what it says. Now Naaman was a commander of the army and the king of Aram. And the king of Aram, Now Naaman was the commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. So our story begins with this man, a grown adult, and well, he begins with him, and he is he's a commander in the army. So he's got men that follow him, and he leads men out into battle, and he's a very successful commander. The only problem is he's sick. He's got this thing called leprosy. So this is not something that maybe you know a lot about these days. It was very common during biblical times, but leprosy is an infection caused by a slow-growing bacteria. It can affect your nerves, your skin, your eyes, even to the lining of your nose can actually begin to flake and peel. Today, we have lots of effective treatments for leprosy, but however, in biblical times, it was a devastating disease. The nerve damage could result in crippling your hands, crippling your feet, paralysis, and may even lead people to go blind. So from Naaman's perspective, this was a very, very big deal for Naaman. He is struggling with leprosy. Now, I have good news for you. God is going to heal him. In verse 15, then Naaman and his attendants went back to the man of God and stood before him and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except for Israel, so please accept this gift from your servant." So Naaman gets healed and he goes back and he's going to find God. He's going to have a relationship in faith with God. And as we walk through this lesson, there are a pile of things that we can learn, both as adults and as kids. But we're going to do something a little weird today. We're actually going to start at the end of the story and start our process walking backwards, looking for the butterfly, the little thing that made the great big difference. So all the way at the end of the story, we find out that even though God healed Naaman, Naaman had to obey. So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times as the man of God had told him. His flesh was restored and he became clean like that of a young boy. So God healed Naaman, but it did require that Naaman take some action. God just didn't give Naaman what he wanted. He said, "Hey, Naaman, go dip yourself 7 times in the Jordan River." Now, this is important to us because he had to follow the instructions exactly. God, the prophet told him, "Hey, go dip yourself in the Jordan River." He couldn't say, "You know what? The Jordan River's nice, but I really like this body of water best." He couldn't say, "Well, you know what? The Jordan River is close, but I could go back home and we got plenty of water back home. I could just wait and get and do my dipping when I..." He had to follow it exactly. You know what else he had to do? He had to follow it completely. The prophet said, dip yourself seven times. So you got to get the picture. Here is a grown man, a person that is out there. He's a leader of men, and he is now standing in the middle of the Jordan, and he dips once. Nothing happens. Dips twice. This is kind of discouraging, God. Nothing's happening. Dips three. Still nothing. Dips four. Still nothing. Dips five. Still nothing. Dips six. How easy would it have been at number six to say, this is doing no good at all, and just walks out the river and he gives up on it? That isn't what God said. What did he say? Dip seven times. So he couldn't stop short. He had to finish the entire thing that God told him to do. Great lesson for us, kids and adults. When God gives us instructions, sometimes we have to follow them exactly, and we have to follow them completely. And it's not sometimes, it's always. When God gives us instructions exactly and completely, you don't get to make things up and put it in the middle and say, well, I'm sure God will be okay with this one. No. God gave Naaman instructions, and he had to follow them exactly and completely. But you know what? Naaman's not the butterfly. That's not who Naaman is. So how about we take a step backwards and see what is there before Naaman was down by the river? Verses 11 through 13. But Naaman went away angry and said, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call the name of the Lord his God, wave his hands over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharaoh, the rivers of Damascus, better than the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? So he turned and went off in a rage. Naaman's servants went after him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you have not done it? How much more then when he tells you to wash and be cleansed? So when Naaman was first told what he had to do, he wasn't a cooperating party. He wasn't. He said, this is dumb. This is stupid. Come on. Hey, just get the prophet to come out here and wave his hands over me and make a magic incantation and say some cool words, and I want to watch my skin get healed. Waters? Water's water, folks. What does it matter whether it's the water of the Jordan or it's the water here or it's the water there? Water's water. What is wrong with this guy? Doesn't he know their water's not any better than our water? You know what Naaman wanted? Naaman wanted to earn his healing. Naaman wanted to set the parameters that God would say, hey, this is how I'm going to get healed. I'm going to tell you, God, what I'm going to do, and you're going to fix my life because of what I said I was going to do. He's trying to earn it. He's trying to make the stipulations that I'll do this and you do that. He wants the show. He wants the magic trick. And there's another good lesson for us here, folks. Because God's grace and mercy must be received God's way. That sounds so simple, doesn't it? But we forget this. If we go to God and we're saying, God, forgive me. God, give me grace and mercy. We then can't sit around and say, but you're going to give me grace and mercy, but this is what I'm willing to do for it. No. If you go to somebody seeking forgiveness, then you are going submissively. You were saying, you know what, whatever you ask of me, that's what I do. It doesn't have to make any sense to me. You know, I don't have to understand why seven times and why wasn't one time be good enough. I don't have to get that. I only have to know that this is what God said do. And so this is what I do. Sometimes we all need a little encouragement to follow God's instruction. So Naaman gets all huffy and mad. He's like, well, forget this. I'm going home. This is dumb. This is a waste of my time. Servant walks up to him and says, hey, if he had asked you to pay a bunch of money, wouldn't you have done that to get yourself clean? If he had asked you to go out and conquer a country to get yourself clean, wouldn't you have done that? And here he is giving you such a simple, easy task, something that even a child could do. And you're complaining about it? Just go do what he said do. The servant had a lot of influence on Laman. But guess what? The servant's not the butterfly. So here we go. Let's take another step back in our story. And we meet Elisha, verses 7 through 10. As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send me to someone to be cured of this leprosy? See how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me? When Elisha, the man of God, heard the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message. Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel. So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to him to say, go wash yourself seven times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed. Elisha was probably one of the most powerful prophets in the Old Testament. He worked so many miracles. And when Naaman arrived in Israel, it caused such a stir. Because here was a guy that was coming. He was known for being victorious. He was known for being a conqueror. He was known for being a soldier. And the king is thinking, oh my gosh, if this man doesn't get what he comes after, he's going to destroy us all. And so it says the king was greatly distressed. But Elisha says, what's your problem, king? God is in our land. And you know what? Just send the guy to me and I will take care of this for you. So the king said, go see Elisha. And interesting enough, Elisha did not go out in person to see him. He sent a messenger. Can you imagine how infuriating that is? This man had just packed up all of his chariots and all of his people and all of his horses and all of his camels, and he had making this long trek, and now he's been told to go see Elisha, and he gets and knocks on the door, and somebody else comes out and opens one and says, hey, Elisha's not able to see you, but I got a message for you. How irritating would that be? It's like calling somebody and you know they're home and you get their answering machine. It's just annoying. And the message and the messenger, well, it's important. Romans chapter 10, verse 14 says, how can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one that they have not heard? And how can they hear without somebody to preach to them? So the message and the messenger was important, but the fact that Elisha didn't go out there tells you something. Guess what? Elisha's not the butterfly. Sure, he's the man with the power. He's the one that God put there and to be the prophet, but Elisha's not the butterfly. So let's take another step back. And we meet a king. Got to be getting close, right? Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. Go. The king of Aram replied, I will send a letter to the king of Israel. So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read, with this letter I am sending my servant Naaman to you so you may cure him of his leprosy. I want you to remember something. Naaman is not an Israelite. He's some guy from another country. So before he could go to another country and look to be cured, he had to make a pit stop, but he had to go and get permission to go. So where did he go? Logical place. He went to his king. And his king said, oh my gosh, Naaman, you're an awesome servant, you're an awesome commander. Of course you can go and get healed. Think how much better you'll be if you don't have this disease hovering over you. Just go. So his king gives him permission. And then the funny thing is, the king gives him the money to pay for his miracle. Silly people. You can't buy God off. God doesn't work miracles based on how much money you have. This isn't how God works, but, you know, give them a break. They didn't know God very well, and they're thinking, hey, look, nobody does anything for free these days. Yeah, that still worked back in Israel, too. So here we go. I'm going to go off, and I'm going to pay for my blessing. Good job, king. You let him go. Could you imagine what Naaman would have thought if the king said, you're not going to some other country? I'm not sending them my best soldier. This isn't going to happen. You stay right here and you just deal with the situation. Without the king, this doesn't happen. But you know what? The king's not the butterfly. He's an active participant, but he is not the butterfly in the story. Folks, I'd like you to meet the butterfly. I'm in verses 2 and 3. Now, bands of raiders from Aram, the place that Naaman is from, had gone out and taken captive a young girl from Israel. And she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." What was her name? Take notes, because there'll be more treats when we finish the sermon series next. I said, take note. What was her name? Unknown. She's not even significant enough to get a name. She's just a girl. A young girl. A little girl. Probably below the age of 13, since they called her a young girl. So she's a little girl. What was her occupation? She was a slave girl. Well, that's not very impressive. She was not a king. She was not a prophet. She was a captive. She had been taken from her parents when she was little in a raid. She was a trophy. And she was just kind of there. How easy would it have been when she heard of Naaman's plight to say, "This isn't my problem. Go let the adults figure this one out. Yeah, I got the answer, but these adults are never going to figure it out. And I'm just going to keep my answer to myself and let this guy suffer." Folks, she had no money. She was not a man, so in biblical times, her opinion would have mattered little. I didn't write the rules. That's how it worked in biblical times. And the fact that she wasn't an adult would have made it even worse. And here's the thing. When it came time to share, she didn't even quote scripture or bark commands. She didn't go to Naaman and say, "Well, you know, if you look this up in the Bible and you look at this quote and this scripture, this is what it means." She didn't have a whole bunch to work with. She had an understanding of who God is. She had a belief in what God could do. She had a knowledge of where Elisha, God's messenger, lived. And her simple statement was, "If only." If only. If only he would be cured of his leprosy. She didn't say he could be cured. She didn't say if he would go down there, he should be cured. She did not say, "Well, maybe if he asks real nice, Elisha will be merciful on him and cure him." She said, "You know what? If only he would go and see Elisha, he would be cured." This little girl was certain of who her God was. She was 100% sure of who God was and what God would do. If only you would stop trying to be an adult and have childlike faith and go and find God. You know, she's taking a big risk here. Because remember, Naaman isn't exactly a patient man. And if Naaman had gone all that way and not got his miracle, and when he came back, what do you think happens to the little slave girl? He could have beaten her and nobody would have cared. He could have killed her and been justified in doing it. So how simple would it have been for this little girl to say, "You know what, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and just do my work." But that's not what she did. She opened her mouth and she said, "If only." And here's the funny thing. She didn't even get to tell Naaman. Nope. She told the wife, and the wife told Naaman, who went to the king and got his permission to go to the prophet and hear his command, which led to the servant a courage and obedience that inspired Naaman to do as he was told, allowing God to heal Naaman, helping Naaman to understand there is but one true God. At the end of the story, verses 17 and 18, if you are not willing, said Naaman, please let me, your servant, be given you as much on earth as a pair of mules can carry. For your servant, he's changed his title, will never again make a burnt offering and sacrifices to any god but the Lord. But may the Lord forgive your servant for this one thing. When my master enters the temple of Ramon to bow down, and he is leaning on my arm, and I have to bow there also. When I bow down in the temple of Ramon, may the Lord forgive your servant for this. This little girl, if only, who Naaman probably didn't even know existed, if only this little girl's one simple message changed Naaman's life forever. That, folks, is called the butterfly effect. You never know the little things that are going to make a big difference in somebody's life. You never know the moment when you took a moment to just stop and show some kindness, to stop and share a word, to stop and share a scripture, to stop and say Jesus loves you. You never know when that moment is going to help you find your butterfly. Because it was there the whole time. They just had to take a look for it. Isn't that a cool story? Doesn't it just make you want to go out and do something small to see what God can do with it? What is it that God could do with my small, insignificant life if I will only tell others about what God can do if they just get in front of God? To me, that's the coolest story anybody could ever tell me. I matter. And you know what? You matter. No matter whether you're here today and you're 80 or 8 or even all the way down to 4 or 5, everybody matters to God.